you hit on her before the day of morning chick.
Bran had an endgame. He was soon to become a very powerful person. It's about time he settled down and found a wife.
Marriage of convenience.
Or of consolidation. Live from the High Court of Mondaedris, the lowest court in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 31 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about courtroom drama and the many forms a justice system can take. But first, the party raises an objection in the Morning Glory campaign, and the factotum, that jack of all trades, master of all trades, has it covered in the Character Creation Forge.
All right, before we get to that, we had a question from our listener, Adam.
Yes, questions.
He sent us a very nice long email explaining his whole situation. It turns out he is actually one of the exceptions to the rule that we mentioned in our first time GMing episode, where he did start with a whole brand new group of players who'd never played before, and he listened to a podcast beforehand.
You are a brave soul, sir.
Yeah, I mean, you took the right approach. So he has a group. They started with a 5e starter kit, and they are playing with the pre-gens within. Basically, the wives of his group would like to also play. And so he's thinking he'll do the same thing. He'll create some pre-gens, and that will kind of guide them along. So he said, if you had to replace the 5 character sheets that came in the 5e starter kit with a new balanced party of 5, what classes, backgrounds, races, and alignments would you choose?
So obviously, we said Valor Bard, Lore Bard, Valor Bard, Lore Bard, Lore Bard.
Right. Because yeah. We are munchkins.
Obviously.
No. That's not what we said.
Sorry. Yeah, obviously. Rogue One, Bard 2 for all of those.
Right. No. So our first recommendation, we recommend a half-orc totem barbarian, either chaotic good or chaotic neutral, with an outlander background. And the reason for that is the Bear Totem is a relatively simple melee class. It's got a couple options, right? You always want to choose whether or not to rage. It's good. It's melee.
And Bear's really forgiving for a new player who doesn't necessarily know how much damage they can take.
Yeah, exactly.
For the second character, we chose a human purple dragon knight, probably neutral good or lawful good, with a noble background. Purple Dragon Knight from the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide has a little more roleplay flexibility than the champion fighter, which only has combat abilities, but it's still equally streamlined for another melee class.
Similar to the champion, your combat move is run up and hit it.
Which is really what you want to do with new players, so that just have them get used to it. In fact, this is a pretty melee-heavy party, and we planned that because we want people to understand movement and then attacking and then getting attacked, looking at their AC, deducting their hit points, needing to have healing, all of those things.
Right. So then we chose a halfling rogue, an iconic, chaotic good or chaotic neutral, and probably a criminal background, but maybe a spy. Basically, nothing really replaces the rogue, mm-hmm. And it's just too iconic to leave out for a first-time group of adventurers, right? You want that rogue checking for traps, sneaking up on things. You want them to learn how sneak attack works, right?
Right.
You want a player to be thinking of ways to get advantage on his attacks, or her attacks, as it were.
And sneak attack's probably the most complicated thing about the class. Well, maybe the stealth rules, but those are always complicated for anyone.
Yeah.
And you can't really emulate a rogue without getting into things that are way more complicated, like Bard.
Right. And maybe the assassin, but I guess the thief would work too.
Yeah, at low levels, either one is fun and
neat. Yeah. I guess that would kind of key off of your player, right? Which one do you think they would enjoy more?
Yeah, and you can always give them the option of choosing that once they get to level 3.
Right.
For a casting class, we went with a half-elf storm sorcerer, ideally neutral good, with the sailor background, or maybe the pirate variant. It's a little different from the sort of traditional wizard. It's a little easier to play, but it still fills that similar role. And storm sorcerer from the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide is really the easiest sorcerer to play, but you could go with any of them.
Yeah, because you don't have to get into all the... You don't have additional uses for sorcery points, basically, which complicate the dragon. And then the wild magic table is sort of a burden on the GM as well, and figuring out how all that stuff works. And then, you know, you accidentally fireball the party.
Yeah, I might actually stay away from wild magic just because you don't want their first experience to be kind of like yakety sacks.
Completely chaotic, right? Yeah. I like the Storm Sorcerer in general. Mm-hmm. I almost switched to a Storm Sorcerer when that first Unearthed Arcana came out.
Lou eventually did once she got around to reading the Unearthed Arcana.
Yeah, exactly. And then our last one is possibly the most controversial and certainly the one that's probably going to require some hand-holding, but a human land druid, neutral good, and a hermit background.
That seems pretty complicated.
It's not the easiest. So it's the caster druid versus the wild shape druid, right? He still has access to wild shape, so you do have to sort of introduce that level of complexity. But this fills in the same role as the cleric. You get the healing, you get a little more nature focus, obviously, but you'll still have the character choosing when to turn into the low CR shapes that are available. I would also recommend just giving them some printed out beasts of valid CR and say, hey, here's what you have available to you, right? Just keep it simple. So where are we in the Morning Glory campaign?
We were right in the middle of a trial.
I think we were right at the beginning of a trial. We had been offered the terms of the trial and very little information and told, choose what you want to do.
Right. So you were told by your advocate, Kala Decanath, that it would come in three parts. That is the trial by jury, the trial by ordeal, and the trial by combat. You guys chose ordeal first. And then after that, you were told, this also came in three parts. You needed to pick three people, one to undergo the ordeal of power, one to undergo the ordeal of will, and one the ordeal of fortitude. You weren't told what that entailed, but you just needed to pick. So Kallax said, wait, power, that's me. I'm giant and strong.
Lou did fortitude.
Yes.
So Lou is a warlock, which is a high con class. So she figured, yeah, I can make my con saves. And if I don't, I have plenty of HP. So I got this.
And then Mahar, who was wisdom secondary, said, well, I'll take will.
So what were the tests?
I did a lot of research on trial by ordeal.
Yeah, is that a real thing? Does that have a historical basis?
Oh yeah, totally. All of these actually were, for the most part. This is a little fancy version, but Kallax got crushed between two stones and then had to make strength checks so as not to get his chest caved in. I think after five rounds or so of him not dying, he passed.
Yeah, it's funny that the paladin could have just... I think we actually tried to get the paladin to do all of them because of his aura, and then they were... you were quickly like, no, one per test.
Maybe. Lou got set on fire and had to make constitution checks not to scream. Now, I think she made them just fine, but the question was, okay, so do you scream out in pain? Lou, being Lou, said, sure, yeah, I'll scream, why not? Yeah, is it weird not to scream? I should scream, right? I'm on fire.
No, Lou, keep it in.
And then Bahar faced the test of will, which was...
Hang on a second.
Okay.
This is weird, right? Bahar faces the test of will, mm-hmm. and we're expecting a will save. Mm-hmm. So the strongest willed in the party is actually our monk, Bastion. Mm-hmm. Why do we not do that again?
You selected him to do the trial by combat.
Right. So we had to choose from our next best. And obviously, right. Bran was going to handle the trial itself because Bran was the charisma persuasion.
Essentially.
And alongside with Emery.
You guys were going to object a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, basically. So Bahar steps in for the test of will.
And there's a pool of clear liquid, and the test is that he needs to remain submerged in it. Now, Angelo thought the test of will was to resist the peer pressure to step into the liquid. So Bahar flatly refused and said, no, I think this is part of the test.
Right?
No, I'm not going in. And the angels were saying, no. No, you need to go in.
It wasn't just the angels. It was everybody. But, I mean, peer pressure aside, he staunchly refused to do it.
That's true. I mean, it did turn out that the pool of liquid was acid.
Right.
So it wasn't just about holding your breath.
No.
Right.
Did we get credit for completing that successfully by chance?
You did not. Okay. No. You also didn't get points for Lou being set on fire because she screamed.
Oh, not our best foot forward. So let's move on to combat. How did that go?
Well, Bastion needed to fight in an arena in single combat against the resident weapon master, the judicial champion. I built her as also level 14, same as you guys. She was a fighter, barbarian. I think she had a little bit of monk in there. Maybe it was just tavern brawler. The point was that she was excellent with any kind of weapon you could throw at her. And she had a bunch of maneuvers. But the trick was that Bastion was able to choose what weapon you used. She was good at all of them. One-on-one level 14 is not really how CR is designed to be used. Right. So she was going to be a very difficult combat for any one of you individually.
Yep.
So Cameron, who plays Bastion, for his weapon chose the blowgun. Because he knew that he wasn't going to need a weapon. He was a monk. He was just going to punch a lot. So pick the least effective weapon for her to use.
Right.
It was a great choice. So they both basically fought unarmed. She didn't have any monk. She was relegated to basically doing 1d4 damage with punches. You know, 1d4 plus
right.
whatever.
Right.
Whereas he, I think at level 14, was doing d8, d10.
Something like that. Yeah.
Right. And he was fast. But, you know, she was still a very difficult combat. In fact, Bastion was close to losing, and then Cube offered a new ability, which was a proactive partial optimization.
Oh, proactive, huh?
Right. Not just, oh, I'm about to die and now I don't die, but hey, let me make you really strong for a little while. And that enabled Bastion to win, but he did take a permanent reduction in his hit points. Now, the actual trial, I set up on a point system. What you had to deal with was you had spent 3 days in Metrol right before the Day of Mourning, basically telling everyone, hey, there's going to be a horrible cataclysm in 3 days.
Right.
It's coming. You should definitely believe us. And no one believed you.
Nope.
And then it happened.
Yep.
And then you weren't anywhere to be found.
Nope.
So, yeah, they basically assumed you did it.
Which we can get into the details of the trial, but is a ridiculous belief.
So there were essentially 5 points in the trial that you guys needed to deal with or to counter. This is a trial by jury, so there was a panel of people listening to your testimony and the testimony of the witnesses who would ultimately make the decision. Those were Queen Danelle, who is still alive, the Queen of Seer, who yes. you had warned in person and who had sort of poo-pooed your dire predictions.
Yes.
There was Hroan, a planetar, Castael, another planetar, Izaz, a Deva, and Kokabiel the Solar.
Which is a lot of people who can't be lied to.
That's correct.
So I'm out. Yeah, we quickly determined that deception was going to be a poor route, and we decided to go with the truth. Right.
I believe the Solar, but definitely the planetars, can all detect lies at will.
Right.
They just know when someone is lying.
So we had the trial, right? And it was Emery and Brand as the two charisma characters left.
And then other people were able to sort of pipe in if they had some evidence. It was essentially you guys calling on them and saying, no, wait, you tell this story.
As witnesses, basically, right? But we were basically doing the speaking role as our advocate did surprisingly little.
Well, it turns out that she was the prosecutor.
Yeah, which this justice system makes tons of sense. And sadly, is probably historically accurate.
There you go. So one thing you needed to do, I give you points for different things. You needed to convince Danelle that you were innocent. Because she was sort of one of the ones giving testimony against you.
Had I understood that was one of the goals at the time, perhaps Brand would not have so viciously attacked her leadership. Like, our approach in the trial was basically to get on the front foot, right? And blame everybody else for their incompetence. Right. Highlighting how much we told them and explaining what actually happened and looking at the complete failure of chain of command, right? And that started with Queen Danelle.
Right. This goes all the way to the top.
Right. So had I known that was the first on the list of objectives that we were going for, perhaps I would have been a little bit more friendly and amicable.
I think Brand also hit on her.
Well, yeah. I mean, as Brand does.
As Brand's right. It was very in character. You also needed to refute the evidence brought against you by the librarian who... If you recall, one of the things that you did while you were in Metrol was go to the library.
Well, that was where we escaped to as we were running from
Nistrum. Right.
And the survivors ran there and then he killed them there.
Yes. But while they were hiding, they asked around for information on disjunction.
Right.
So, and the librarian survived. And
what are the odds? I mean, what are the odds?
Huh. It's almost like that was planned.
Right.
So he remembered members of your party searching for information on a disjunction. And also everyone knew that Raltul Kesh burst out from the ground from directly beneath the library.
Mm-hmm.
However, you did have some evidence on your side. We talked about before, the Deva Deary was there when you were transformed into monsters by Primus and then told to go stop Raltukesh.
Right.
So he gave evidence on your behalf and you needed to provide corroborating evidence.
Right. Which I believe we did.
Yes, you did get points for that. And then, maybe 3/4 of the way through, there was surprise evidence when one of the angels accused the party of association with devils.
Which was difficult to refute without lying.
Because you're missing
on account of I was missing an arm that had so recently been occupied by a devil.
And then, so Brand is trying to say, wait, look, that's not my fault. And then they point to Emery.
Yeah, we learned at that moment, I believe, that Emery had no soul.
She learned that she had no soul.
Heretofore had been by far the truest good of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Unimpeachable moral character. Turns out, lacking a soul.
Mm-hmm. Sold to devils by her parents.
Right. Right.
So Emery's backstory was that her family had been killed by devils, and that sort of stoked this fire in her, and probably was also the impetus for her being so good.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was basically out to rid the world of that kind of evil. But now she was finding out, in fact, the reason her family had been killed is that they had sold her soul, and then the pact had gone wrong, and they had been killed by devils. So now suddenly she is saying, oh, I should really go get that back, huh?
Yeah.
That would be handy.
Yeah. And then the association with Behemoth, I think Bran was just like, hey, look, you got to do what you got to do. He's not lying.
That's right. Behemoth had been captured because you sold him out. So that was a point in your favor.
Right. And our general defense was, if we had perpetrated the Day of Mourning, why would we have run around warning everybody who would listen? And then we were able to offer testimony, basically, that Cube had explained to us, or Primus had explained to us before.
Right, although you didn't mention that you had a remnant of Primus.
Right, but...
You had the information.
We did say that we got the information from Primus.
Right.
Right. And so we were able to then offer all of the information that he had, which also lined up with, you know, the series of events and basically corroborated our point of view, which was the truth.
You guys were lucky that it was the truth.
You know. We were lucky that we didn't cause a Day of Mourning. And actually, I think one of the issues with Deary was that we were asked about how we came to acquire Deary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that came out.
And we had to explain that we had gone there in an attempt to prevent the Day of Mourning and accidentally given Nistromax.
Let Nistromax rest.
Right.
Open the door.
So it was like, yes, that is true. We did do that. But Queen Danelle.
So you made many different skill checks, persuasion checks, which were sometimes successful, sometimes not. You were making lots of knowledge checks to try to remember things, piece things together.
Yeah.
And eventually, most of the story came out. You guys really felt like they were going to rule against you, or at least Bahar certainly did.
Bahar definitely did, because we maintained an air of righteous indignation that he was worried was good. I mean... Angelo is actually an attorney, so right. he was like, that's not a good approach, guys.
Right, maybe we shouldn't insult them. Hold on.
It's like, I defer to no court, sir.
But like I said, I had a point system, and when I added up the points all together from all three parts of the trial, you were actually pretty successful.
Yeah, I think we ended up with just about all of the potential rewards that we could have gained, right?
Yeah, I think there was maybe one more level of reward that you could have gotten, but I think out of... maybe 15 points, you got 12, 15 total points.
Well, yeah, because Bahar didn't carry...
It didn't go in. He didn't jump into acid willingly.
Right.
What kind of willpower is that?
And Lou screamed.
So we'll find out the repercussions of the not guilty verdict next week.
And hopefully we'll find out what those rewards were, too. All right, so let's talk about trials then. We've obviously just... given an example from our experience, right, to kind of kick this off, but in a more general terms, right, what is a trial?
It's a scene or an encounter where the players have to prove something, usually the events, to either be true or false. Now, in Morning Glory, you were trying to prove yourselves innocent, but it certainly could be trying to prove someone else guilty or that something else did happen. You could be on the prosecutor's side. Lots of different circumstances.
Right, and it also doesn't necessarily have to be a formal justice system type trial, right? It could just be that kind of social encounter where you desperately need to convince, say, the board of the company that your weapons, you know, Stark Industries, are being sold to terrorists in the Middle East and being turned against the United States.
Right. Or you're standing in front of a mob that has pitchforks and torches.
And you got to convince them that that devil on your arm. It's cool, man.
Right. So yes, trial doesn't necessarily mean there is a court.
But I think the key is that it's generally going to have that social component, right? Where mm-hmm. you're getting down to discussions of fact or fiction.
So anyone who's been in an actual court knows that often in real life, they're super boring.
Oh my God, they're so boring. Spend one day on jury duty.
So why is it that people watch so many police procedurals and courtroom dramas?
Because they cut out all the dead time. Because
oh.
you just go from highlight to highlight. It's like the highlight reel of a police investigation, a highlight reel of a trial. I mean, that's basically the format of Law and Order.
And it's the format of a lot of investigations that we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
Travel. This is great in an RPG. Skip the boring stuff.
Yep. So you could be tempted to try and make it as realistic as possible, but I would encourage you, don't do that.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. go ahead and make it very stylized and focus on what makes it dramatic and exciting for the players and not about what makes it historically accurate or true to form.
Yeah. Witty banter. This is a great opportunity to let the players do all of that.
Yeah, and you know all of the things that your lawyer friends say are wrong about courtroom dramas? Yeah, use all of those right. things, right?
That's why they're in the dramas.
Right. It's okay if you shout objection at every third word, right? Like, it's fun. You know, you can ask leading questions. You can use hearsay. The standard of evidence, especially things like the need to disclose evidence and those sorts of things, ignore them. That's garbage, right? Let them be blindsided by something they didn't know about.
Mm-hmm. As a GM, it also really helps to have a judge that's either corrupt or maybe is really difficult to read or maybe just has an entirely different outlook from the players, like an angel, for example.
Yeah, those are difficult to read, by the way.
Sometimes they don't have faces.
Yeah. Certainly, this is a great time to establish agendas for NPCs. The prosecutor or the judge might be corrupt. But maybe there's an honest witness who just wants to do the right thing. Or maybe there's a juror who's corrupt and trying to throw the jury, and you have to figure that out too.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk a bit more about that when we get to plot hooks.
The other thing that makes it exciting is the stakes. This is one of the opportunities where a non-combat encounter can really be life or death.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about last episode about XP rewards in D&D and Lex Starwalker's episode about that. It's a good example of where a non-combat encounter can literally be deadly.
Right.
Or even beyond deadly. You don't even have a chance. You're just going to die if you fail this because you're on trial for your life.
And it's you versus an entire army or police force.
Right. The entire corrupt system, man. You have to take down the entire Shadowrun universe.
It's also a great time to introduce alternative objectives besides just getting yourself off the hook or proving a point.
Yeah, so one example, I'm reading the Gaunt's Ghost series of books from Dan Abnett, which is a 40K thing, and they're basically put on trial for warp taint. They are suspected of being tainted by chaos, for good reason. And part of the objective there is not just to not die, right? Not be summarily executed for being tainted, but also to sort of reestablish their role in the command structure of the Imperial Guard. Taking the other direction, you could have objectives of trying to defame the opposing attorney or undermine the general's political power, right? Expose him for the corrupt individual that he is, and that will cause political outrage as well.
Right. You don't want the consequences of winning this encounter to basically be that the story goes back to where it was before.
Right.
There should be something else at stake. So, for example, in the Morning Glory campaign, by proving yourselves innocent, you then gained the angels as a very powerful ally.
Right. And were then tasked by them with fixing the Moorland / Nusir, right?
Right.
I kind of took this approach, as we just talked about, with how I treated Queen Danelle in the trial, right? How Bran was constantly highlighting her failures as a leader. It was self-serving in the sense that it helped my cause to not be responsible, right? It helps to have a fall guy. But then in the larger picture of things, right, it was also a referendum on her position as queen and whether or not we could trust her, frankly.
Yeah, you guys actually really didn't know. Because the angels, you were pretty sure, okay, they're at least good, if maybe weirdly just.
Right.
But Danelle, who knows?
I think afterwards, and this is maybe a little bit of a spoiler and also some hazy memory, she actually came up to us after the trial and like apologized, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was where we were so vicious in blaming her that I think, or I'm going to choose to believe, that part of that is that reason. And then she became an ally. She actually became one of our most staunch supporters later on because we held her accountable.
Yeah, that's probably why.
So you've set the stakes for the trial, right? You've determined why there's going to be a trial, why that's a worthwhile scene or session to have in your campaign. How do you prepare for that trial scene?
You really need to define the procedures of the trial. How does it actually occur? This can be based in real life. You know, it's a good idea to research period appropriate cultures, especially in pop media. It's a really, really good opportunity to go rewatch My Cousin Vinny.
I mean, Marissa Tomei deserved that Oscar and she got robbed. Her whole career robbed. Marissa Tomei famously won an Oscar for My Cousin Vinny and then proceeded to never work again.
She's starting to make a comeback.
Finally. It took like 15 years.
Yeah, I know. So how does your trial work? Are there advocates or attorneys? Is there a prosecution? Is there a defense? Is witness testimony allowed?
Is your advocate actually the prosecutor?
Have fun with terminology.
Right.
Another thing to consider is how does a justice system change when magic is real?
Yeah, especially spells like Zone of Truth, mm-hmm. right? Or also the possibilities of magic just create truly fantastical possibilities where you could say in the real world, you can't kill your wife in your 50th story apartment and then jump out the window. If that's what the police are saying happened, that's insane. That theory is never going to float, right? It's not possible. But if you have spider climb, or Featherfall, now that is very valid. And there's not a lot of evidence that magic was used, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with that impact?
Right. Is testimony from a corpse admissible?
I mean, that's a good question because you could just ask the victim.
Yep. Speak with dead.
Victim says you did it. Yeah. But does victim have true sight?
Right. And another thing to consider, do people get kind of lazy relying on magic? You just throw someone in a zone of truth and whatever they say must be true.
And are there procedures around that, right? Are you mm-hmm. allowed to pre-interview the corpse?
Do you have rights around getting thrown into a zone of truth?
Yeah.
Is that an unlawful search?
I mean, yes.
If there's a betazoid, are they allowed to just read your mind and figure out what you're thinking?
Right. What about cross-examination? Do you have the right to face your accuser?
In general, I would say let that happen because anytime you can get people face-to-face with other characters, it becomes more fun.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely going to be much more difficult and probably a little more boring if you don't allow that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to define the stakes. We talked about it earlier, but you want to hammer that out. So one thing is life or death for the PCs can be extremely risky.
Because mm-hmm.
if they blow it, campaign's done.
Like auto TPK.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it can be good if they're advocating for an NPC who's important to them.
Right.
That way they have the same sense of loss, but your campaign can carry on.
In a little bit, we'll talk about other options rather than summary execution.
Fine. But summary execution is the best.
It is pretty cool. And then you'll want to determine what is the burden of proof. What is the win condition, the lose condition? Are there gradations in there for
right.
this trial?
Right. Is it beyond a reasonable doubt? Is mm-hmm. it without a Planetar's failing word? Right. I mean, is preponderance of evidence enough?
You're going to need to decide what mechanical system you're going to use to judge that success or failure, and then set the objective from there.
Yeah, so in things like D&D, this is going to be persuasion checks, usually opposed checks, something like that. And then also figuring out, okay, so you succeeded on that persuasion check. What does that mean in the overall picture of the trial? And you talked about earlier, for Morning Glory, you set up a point system. There were 5 points available in the trial based on meeting the certain objectives. So you basically built that quick little short system in order to establish just some mechanics for judging success or failure.
Yeah, I think one of the easiest ways to do that is if you have a jury or maybe just a panel, each of them gets a vote. And then if they have slightly different personalities or different backstories, then your players can target each of them with a particular type of argument or a bribe or whatever, and they get a particular vote. If you get 3 out of the 5, you're not guilty, whatever.
Right. you also want a mechanical system behind that to determine what does it take to convince that character, that NPC. Like, what does it take to sway this jury member? And you can set that as, well, this jury member is very kind-hearted, so an appeal to saving children will work on her. Or this one is hopelessly corrupt, and you will never convince her that you're innocent because she benefits more if you die.
And this is an opportunity for your players to be making those skill checks to figure these things out about whomever they're trying to convince. You know, maybe when they recess, you can make research checks, or you just make insight checks in order to read people while they're listening to you.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, you know, you're making probably persuasion or deception checks when you're making your argument, but you're also reading the courtroom using insight.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, take a recess, do some research, figure out, oh, has this person fallen on hard times economically? Are they maybe on the take? You know, is this previously noble official? Is he now corrupt?
Why is this witness sweating so much?
Right.
I think of 12 Angry Men, the light pads on the sides of the woman's nose indicates that she usually wears glasses.
Right.
But she's not wearing glasses on the stand. Why is that?
Yeah. Those are some very thick lenses. So the other practical preparation as a GM is you want to be able to facilitate the scene. So you want to have arguments and accusations ready. And then you also kind of need to anticipate what the player's arguments and accusations are going to be so that you have responses to them. And I think the trick here is that you're not trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to plan some bad strategic moves. You can make accusations that you know the players can prove are false.
Yeah, you absolutely should include those. It's not just a trap where they lose.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, at 7th level, right before you joined the game, there was a very short trial that...
Oh, in Stormreach, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was just meant to show the corrupt system and have all of you thrown into the arena.
Yeah.
You know, and we didn't spend very much time in-game on that. There wasn't any evidence presented. It was a sham trial.
Yep. But the players knew it was a sham trial as well.
They learned very quickly, yeah. Yes. That, you know, no matter what evidence they tried to present, it didn't really matter.
Right.
For an actual real trial, yeah, you totally want to present things that are easy to refute.
Right. And then, like I said, the players have their arguments. Be prepared for them. And especially good is the twist, the secret evidence that the players never find out about until it's presented against them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great opportunity to amp up the drama and score one on your side that the players can then figure out how to refute themselves.
Yeah, there's a lot of improvisation involved here. I'd recommend going back and listening to the improvisation episode.
Yeah, that would certainly help too. Mm-hmm. Strong improv and that trial lawyery voice acting can go a long way here. So what are some systems for scoring and managing trials?
Well, you can make up your own, kind of like I did, which is just come up with different objectives, assign a point value to them, and then score the party based on how well they do.
Yeah. Dark Heresy has the inquest system that's presented in Enemies Within.
It's very thorough.
Yeah, it's generally used for like research, but a piece of that research of the Inquisition can be trials. So that same type of system you could easily port over.
And then 4th edition had skill challenges, which for the most part I think we can agree were pretty much a failure as a system.
Yeah, they weren't popular.
Yeah, but there were a lot of hacks made to them. And, you know, if you don't really have any idea what else to do, it's not a bad place to start, which is just players need a particular number of successes before they hit a particular number of failures.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would not recommend explaining what these rules are.
Oh, yeah.
To the players. You're a little limited with the Dark Heresy example, but certainly the way that you ran the trial, we had no idea what the score was,
mm-hmm.
other than what we were able to glean based on insight.
Right. Or what the particular objectives were, although it was pretty obvious that, hey, a witness is presented, they have evidence against you, obviously you're going to try to refute that.
Right. We didn't know what the objectives were for scoring, but we definitely knew what our objective was to basically tell the truth.
Right.
It's the nice thing about being falsely accused, right? Especially on a ridiculously trumped up charge. Kidnapping a country.
Someone's got to take the blame.
It's like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego in all of this? Yeah. Okay, so then to make this work, you have to prep your players as well. So how should you do that?
Well, you can do what I did. It's very handy to provide an advocate type of character, maybe a lawyer who represents them, who can help them anticipate the opposition's arguments. It's basically how in computer RPGs, right at the beginning, there's some sort of omniscient narrator that's telling you, hey, here's how you open boxes, and here's how you turn around and change the camera.
Yeah.
It allows you to, as a GM, speak through that character and say, okay, I know you don't understand this. You don't get our ways. Here's how we do things.
It's kind of like the early trials in every episode of Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney. How you're just, you're constantly being told you're out of order for doing things that aren't completely ridiculous.
The best thing about having a character in-game explain it is that that character has different motivations or has a different outlook. So maybe if you, as a GM, change the rules later or want to surprise them with something, it's because your advocate character didn't fully explain or didn't explain in a way that your players understand, because why would I explain that? That doesn't even make any sense. How could you think it would be any different?
Right. That's exactly how you introduce the twist, is you give them the information, but you don't give them the full information. And that's just, hey, the advocate left that out for a reason, but whatever reason it was, it happened.
And it's also great if your party doesn't know that they can completely trust this person.
Yeah.
But you need to have them lay out the procedure for the trial, so in general, your players know what to expect. Don't expose them to the unnecessary mechanics. Like we said, track all that progress behind the scenes.
And depending on what your player's experience level is with the system you're playing, it might be a good idea to suggest some of their abilities or spells, that sort of stuff, that would be helpful. So, for example, if Zone of Truth is permitted in the trial and you have a paladin, maybe he should prepare Zone of Truth.
In general, as a good GM, you're going to want to be reminding your players of these abilities and options that the character would know that they have, but maybe the player doesn't use that often.
Right. Okay, so the players have spent an hour coming up with their arguments. You have spent a couple hours preparing the trial. Now it's time to actually run the scene.
Fortunately, unless you're, I guess, that 1%, and I guess you're out there, you've seen a bunch of courtroom dramas. So rely on them. Use those tropes or subvert those tropes. Either is great. You know, all sit presenting the Honorable Judge Winston Parkinson.
Sure. Winston Parkinson is one of the most famous trial judges in the entire state, sir.
As everyone knows, and he hates it when people stand in his presence.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are all being rude. You should have known this.
Duh.
But yeah, do things like have an opening statement. Set the mood. Let them know the direction that the scene is going, right?
It's a great opportunity to overact.
And you can play this both ways. Like, if the opposing prosecutor doesn't really seem to believe that they're guilty, maybe he gives a really weak statement.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're still feeling like they're losing the trial, well, maybe that's how you've shown them that the fix is in.
Right.
Right. And likewise, if he firmly believes, right, but he's a straight shooter, you can establish that in his opening statement.
Or if it's something like, ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
Oh, well, you should definitely do that. Yeah. I mean, all good trial attorneys speak in a thick Southern accent. It's what I learned from my cousin Vinny.
And then, of course, you know, they're probably corrupt.
Right.
But that's something your players can use.
Yeah, and let them make skill checks. I mean, they should basically be rolling after every passage.
They should be jumping on, wait, hold on. I want to roll an inside check on what they just said. Right. Or let me look at juror number 6.
Right. So then you're going to be presenting evidence. There's going to be witnesses. There might be physical evidence. Like we said earlier, you might allow hearsay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, depending on the level of the trial. If this is a medieval court, it might just be someone accuses you of witchcraft.
Right.
Look, my third nipple speaks.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you're heavier than a duck. You must be a witch. This is where you would allow cross-examination. So after you present, you have the opening statements. They begin presenting evidence. Give the players a chance to refute each bit of evidence that's presented.
Yeah, just let them do it right afterward. It gets less confusing. You don't have to hold as much in your mind. And it lets you as the GM tweak the future testimony of witnesses based on your players' reactions.
Right.
Then give the players the opportunity to present their argument. Have fun just poking holes in their argument, whether they're justified or not.
Yeah, if you've got even a little bit murder hobo-ish characters, this is going to be a fun time to remind them of all of the things they did of questionable quality.
Right. Who is this witness? Oh, we killed his mom.
Right.
But she was the baker and we needed bread.
Right.
Come on. Come on. Oh, 2 CP, really? She was the robber here.
Yeah, you should definitely leave them unsure of how they're doing. And unless you're building towards some twist where they're going along smoothly and then you pull the rug out from under them, you want them to feel nervous.
Even if you don't have something real that you can pin on them, remember that you're using other NPCs. You're using the jury and the judge and the lawyers. Maybe these are unreasonable people.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhere in there, two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through, throw in some sort of twist. Maybe a surprise witness, maybe a strange custom of the proceeding that your players weren't expecting.
Right. They play musical chairs, and yeah. The one without a chair is summarily executed.
Changes the makeup of the entire trial.
Another great one is last-minute evidence. This has just come to our attention, mm-hmm. right? You can make a big dramatic moment of it, of somebody rushing into the courtroom and saying something to the opposing counsel, and mm-hmm. then that person goes up to the judge, and they say something in very hushed tones, and you know they're making skill checks to determine what's going on here, right? And they're catching that the judge is looking at them very darkly, and that everyone is a little bit on edge and nervous, and then you find out, oh yeah, they found out that you had used demon magic. Like that blood magic that you used down there that you were using for good, obviously.
Right. We had to bring a warlock.
Yeah, yeah. They noticed.
Right. Or, like in My Cousin Vinny, it could be that it happens to be in the party's favor.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or surprise witness, Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great chance if, you know, the party is saying, man, I just wish we had this. That would prove everything. This is a great time to bring that in.
Or you've offered them a way to get it.
Right, right.
And then maybe they've given up all hope of that, and now it comes through.
Right. And then you want to issue closing statements. The function of this is to give them a last round of skill checks mm-hmm. to figure out how are they doing. Like, they should have a strong inclination of what's coming when the verdict is read.
Yeah, it also gives your players another chance to either succeed where they failed before or fail where they succeeded
right,
before.
Right, right, right. And now that they know what's in the cards, you break for deliberation, and the party is allowed to figure out what to do next.
Yep. Right? Just let them stew for a bit.
Yeah.
Maybe they think, oh no, this is definitely not going to go our way, and they start planning an escape.
Right. Or maybe they try and bribe somebody or cut a backroom deal, right? Mm-hmm. A last-second plea bargain. Or, as we did in Morning Glory, we weren't sure what was going to happen, but we stood pat because we knew we were innocent.
I was impressed by that. I wasn't sure if you guys were going to try that. It's not really your style.
We didn't have a great way to escape is the problem.
Also true. And you guys were still suffering from the disjunction. A lot of you didn't have any magic.
Oh, that was part of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So then the verdict is going to be read, right? So how do you determine what the verdict is going to be?
Well, you could do what I did, the point system. It could also just be preordained. Now, I would say probably you don't want to do this except with a sham trial. Yeah. But there might be an instance where, okay, you've decided, yes, this is definitely how it's going to go. And it doesn't really matter how the players do in it. But in those instances, I would probably say you need degrees of success or failure.
Yeah, it's one of those cases where the facts of the case require a certain result. But that result can only be mitigated. So, for example, the Gaunt's Ghosts example I talked about, right? If they have a chaos taint, they have to be killed. And either way, being accused of chaos taint, they can't just return to normal guard duty mm-hmm. in the Imperial Guard. No matter how that ends up, they're not going back to their day jobs. And the degrees of success or failure is perhaps how close they get to being truly free or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they have to wear monitoring devices if you're in a cyberpunk setting or something like that.
Right. Now, don't tell your players that an outcome is preordained.
No. I mean, you should telegraph it if it's going to be negative, but don't tell them that they couldn't have failed.
Right. There definitely could have been a scenario where you guys were fighting your way out of New Metrol against angels and thinking, is it bad karma to kill an angel?
Right. And then delivering the verdict. How should you do that, Ishan?
Draw it out. Just relish that anticipation. Watch your party squirm. It's rare that you get a chance to have everyone paying attention to everything that you're saying and being almost terrified about what you're about to say.
Yeah, and this doesn't have to be some pre-written box text that you're going to read to them, right? Mm-hmm. You could do this as simple as focusing on every detail of the proceedings. You're walked back into the room. You're ordered to sit. The bailiff nods to you. The judge says, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict? The lead juror, who you now describe in a little bit more detail than usual, he has a drip of sweat running down his brow. Mm-hmm. He says, yes, judge, we have. You just drag that out and get there. It doesn't have to be some great oration. It just has to be just long enough that everyone is like, all right, I gotta know. I gotta know.
Please tell me. And then guilty, not guilty. Whatever the verdict ends up being, deliver it just like a hit to the gut.
Yep.
And then the consequences occur. Maybe they walk free, you just move on to the next plot point, or they go and try to find out who framed them in the first place.
Right. This is, as we talked about, when you're deciding to do a trial, right? You have to frame this appropriately.
Yeah, maybe the NPC that you were defending in the first place gets reunited with their family.
Exactly.
Of course, if they're guilty, maybe now it's time for incarceration, and then so begins the prison arc.
Yeah, I love prison arcs.
Yeah, I know.
Alternatively, you could have execution, and I would caution against this for PCs, but this is a great one for NPCs, mm-hmm. especially if you want to write them out of the story, for example, or you really want the PCs to feel a sense of loss. If you take away their favorite tag along, mm-hmm. that could be a problem.
One thing that might work well here is one PC is selected by the PCs to undergo the punishment. And maybe not death, but maybe it's having their hand cut off.
Yeah.
So now everyone needs to decide, okay, which one of us can handle this the best? Who's going to take one for the team?
Or as you did in Stormreach, this is where the PCs get thrown into combat. They're now condemned to the gladiatorial pits. They have to fight for their freedom.
Or they've decided, this trial was a sham.
And I'm going to kill you all.
Right? We're fighting our way out of the court. We tried to do this your way.
Right. It's time for rough justice.
And I was prepared for you guys to fight the angels. And the reason that you would have had a chance is that New Metrol had its resources stretched because they're fighting off undead. So they weren't going to commit everything to preventing you from escaping because, you know, they sort of feel like we're angels. We got forever to do this.
Yeah, we didn't have our magic abilities, though. And that was the problem.
That was randomly determined. So you could have had them back at that point.
We were rolling like saves or whatever to like regain them.
Yeah, basically.
Right? Yeah. So what are some story hooks that you can use to integrate a trial into your campaign?
Well, like we talked about before, it's a great way to tie up those old plot points that PCs had thought they were never going to have to deal with again. All those consequences that they've skirted before.
Oh, yeah. Those early level murder hobo tendencies before you got on the main plot thread. They're not happy with you back there in that small town.
Right?
They got a law in this town.
Those things that you did before your chaotic neutral character started to get on the straight and narrow.
Right.
Before they resolved that arc and weren't a traitor anymore.
Right. That bounty hunter doesn't care about your story, man. It just has to bring you in.
You can revisit previous NPCs, previous enemies or friends. Maybe bad things have happened to them now. You can bring them in as witnesses, or they're the ones that you're trying to defend.
Yeah, especially if they've like embarrassed somebody or maybe undermined the authority of like the Thieves Guild or something like that. You know, I mean, that's exactly the type of group who would put on a sham trial on trumped up charges. Right. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe these are some of the NPCs that helped you at risk to their own lives and livelihood for the greater good. And, you know, you had to ask them to do that. And then you moved on to bigger things. But
now they're facing those consequences.
Exactly. And yeah. For a moral party, it's a quandary about, okay, in the future, do we continue to ask like these poor peasants to help us?
Right. And then you can also use this to introduce new plot points. We've been talking about it with the corrupt court, but maybe that's what the party is doing now, is they've discovered the corruption. Now they got to figure out how to fix it.
Surprise evidence is an excellent way to bring in twists and hooks. Like maybe one of your players' characters doesn't have a soul.
Jerk.
How did they know?
Yeah, you want to set this up so that they have a direction after the trial is complete, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want them just riding off into the sunset. Do you hear that, Ishan?
Is that the sound of all the trial attorneys who are getting ready to tell us everything that we got wrong?
Maybe, but it is definitely the sound of the Character Creation Forge. Before we move on to the Character Creation Forge, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane, @mundangerous, that's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan, @evilsenscarne, that's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show, @tptcast.
You can also email us if you can't fit it into 140 characters at totalpartythrill@gmail.com.
And last but not least, you can find us on the web at www.totalpartythrillcast.com.
So this week in the Character Creation Forge, we're talking about the Factotum. And this is another one of our 3.5 throwbacks. It was a class that came out late in 3.5's life cycle. It was basically a character class that had access to every skill as a class skill, and then basically could do a little bit of everything, could emulate some Turn Undead and Divine Magic, a little bit of Arcane Magic, was obviously great at the skills, could emulate other classes, class features. It was a fun class to play, but a little harder to emulate in 5e, though the concept is, I think, very close to our hearts.
Yes, this is the perfect skill monkey. This is the jack of all trades that isn't the bard.
Well, maybe a little bard. So there are 18 skills in the game, and this character gets 17 of them.
Okay, it's possible to get all 18.
Pretty easy, actually.
But we kind of made a choice, and we'll talk about that in a bit, to stop at 17. Mm-hmm. So what's the build?
It's Rogue 6, Purple Dragon Knight 7, Knowledge Cleric 1, Bard 6.
All right, let me unpack this.
Yeah.
17 proficiencies. We start with Variant Human. That gives us 1. We have a background. That gives us 2. We are Rogue. That gives us 4. That's our first class. Mm-hmm. We're a Purple Dragon Knight who gains Persuasion at level 7. We're a Knowledge Cleric, which gains 2 of the 4 knowledge skills, the Arcana, History, Religion, and Nature. And then the Bard gets 1 when you multiclass into it, and 3 at level 3.
As a Lore Bard.
Right.
And at level 1, as a Variant Human, we use a feat for Skilled, which gives you 3 more.
Right. Last one is a feat. So we've got 17 proficiencies. In addition to that, we have 9 expertise skills.
That's every expertise in the game.
Yes. So you get 2 out of the History, Religion, Arcana, Nature from the Cleric. You get 1 in Persuasion from the Purple Dragon Knight. You get 2 from the Bard, and you get 4 from the Rogue. And expertise, for our purposes here, is just you double your proficiency bonus. Mm-hmm. It's not all called expertise.
So why did we only go 17 and not all 18? Actually, we could have gotten up to 20.
Yeah, we easily could have spent a feat to get skilled again and taken 3 more skills. It's because of the negative space. It's you are good at everything. What's the one thing you aren't good at?
Yeah, that's maybe more fun.
Yeah, and tell me why. Like, why have you not picked up survival? Are you just a hopeless urbanite?
Or you're amazing at everything, but you just cannot read people. You got that face blindness, so you don't have insight.
Right. Or you are just, you will never be sneaky, man. You're just too big. You'll never sneak.
But man, can you sing?
Yeah, I mean, you're dexterous. You are physically skilled, mm-hmm. but you are just clumsy. Like, you never spot it. You never spot the problems.
Mm-hmm. So the reason that we went with this particular spread was to get all of the expertises, but also to make sure that this character was still competent in combat, because you've got 7 levels of fighter, you get extra attack, you've got a decent amount of hit points, you can use armor if you need to.
Yep. You've got 6 levels of rogue, so as long as you're using one of the rogue sneak attack weapons with your fighter chassis, you can add in sneak attack.
And you're a pretty good leader, because you've got both Purple Dragon Knight and Bard 6 with those inspiration dice.
Yep. And Cleric is still useful because it gets you both of the healing spells,
mm-hmm.
and it also gets you Bless, as well as 2 great cantrips in Guidance and Resistance.
So you're definitely a jack of all trades. You're a master of at least 9 of them.
You are a master of at least 9, yeah.
We will say this build is a little bit mad.
Yeah, it needs everything. You start with Rogue, but then you need Strength or Dexterity to multiclass into Fighter.
Probably Dex.
You need Wisdom to multiclass into Cleric, and you need Charisma to multiclass into Bard. All 4 of those need to be at 13 or higher.
Right, and unfortunately, you don't really need Intelligence, so you could just dump that and then rely on your Proficiency bonus and Expertises to sort of bump up those Intelligence-based skills a little more. You could bump Intelligence, and then your others are just sort of suffering because they're stuck at 13 or maybe 14 to sort of optimize those ability score bonuses a little bit more. But we've only got you spending 1 of your feats on the skilled feat. So you've got a fair number of ability score increases you can pump into your stats.
Yeah, and strength is a decent dump stat because you don't need it for fighter because you can qualify on dex probably. Mm-hmm. And there's only 1 skill tied to strength. There's right. athletics. So maybe athletics is your dump skill. Like, you are great at everything else. You're a -1 at athletics. A great acrobat, not a great athlete.
All right, so what kind of character can do all of these things?
I don't have a good answer for that. It almost has to come from that background of that jack of all trades thing, right? Like, maybe you're a journeyman and you just kind of drift around from job to job and from profession to profession, and you've seen a lot. And so as you've traveled, you've been interested, you wanted to dabble in a little bit of skullduggery. For a while, you signed up with the Purple Dragon Knights, or setting generic, that's the banneret. So you joined a military. You, as a rogue, you amassed enough money to become a minor noble. You ended up as a banneret for a major lord. That got old. You decided to get religious. That didn't work out. I'm an entertainer. It's tough because you're going to be so just all over the place. And the key to playing this character is sort of going deep into classes. Mm-hmm. You kind of want to hit Rogue 6 before you move on. So you're just kind of wandering around, right? You kind of got to piece it together in a way that your story fits together. What would you consider your factotum?
I'm thinking of a character who initially wants to be totally self-sufficient.
Okay.
So I'm thinking of maybe like a Robin.
Like an Outlander kind of.
Yeah, a bit, but probably needs many of those specialized skills. Maybe Michael Weston from Burn Notes.
Okay, yeah, I like that.
But then finds out that, you know, no matter how skilled you are at things, you can't do everything on your own. You know, they're not the best at many things. They're the best at many skills, but they're certainly not going to be the best in combat, even though they'll be able to hold their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they get most of these skills, like 12 of them before level 10.
Yeah.
So they have prepared for life on their own, for being able to handle whatever comes. And then they're finding out, well, you know what? Everything's easier with a party.
Uh-huh.
But of course, the party is still going to be able to benefit from all of those expertises and all those skills. So I think it's someone who starts off as a loner and doesn't want to trust anyone, but then finds a home with these other skilled and adventurous people.
It's too bad that it's not more just straight out powerful, because this is the perfect Munchkin arc. So I have to ask, what is the dump skill for your Michael Weston character?
Ooh, maybe performance. I know that sounds like the Munchkin answer, because whoever needs performance, but I sort of like the idea of like this person who's so good at everything has stage fright.
Okay, all right, I can see that.
And if they've got the spy background, then they are often called on to impersonate people who enjoy standing in front of other people or giving a performance or giving an oration, and that's when they sort of choke.
Okay. I am coming around to that idea. I still don't love it, to be honest.
It's my character.
I just think there's an element to being a spy that has that performance that's inherent in it, right? You're ultimately constantly performing as something else.
Which is why you can do it when you don't think of it as a performance.
Yeah, okay. All right. It's nature, right? Michael Weston's weakness is nature. Like, he really struggled when he had to go down to the jungles, right?
Well, nature is really more, it's an int skill, so it's really more like botany. Surviving in the jungle is, I think, more survival, but he's got that down.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. All right. Well, then it's religion.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Although he masquerades as a priest a lot, right, pretty convincingly.
Yeah.
It's just he does that Irish accent, and then done, priest.
Right. And he definitely understands Arcana and history. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, there's no doubt about that. So I don't know. He's maybe he has spent the feat.
Yeah.
Maybe he did. You know, Michael Weston didn't need the extra two skills. He's good. All right. If you want to support the show, the easiest way to do that is to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you're willing to help us out, we'll read your 5-star review on the air.
You can also find us on Stitcher. It's like a Pandora for podcasts. If you like or favorite us there, the algorithm will help other people find us.
So, our listener, Adam, whose question we answered at the beginning of the show, he did leave us a 5-star review. It was very long and very, very nice. He requested that we didn't read it on the air because of its length. And I'm going to honor that for now.
For now.
Until we've got to pad out another episode.
37 minutes.
Right. So, what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We're talking about character advancement and leveling up.
And in the Character Creation Forge?
We'll be building a dragon disciple.
Well, that's it for episode 31 of Total Party Thrill. I hope it lives up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.